Hello, welcome to the Rethink Your Understanding podcast, where we dive deep into transformative insights on leadership, agile, lean, DevOps, value stream management, and flow engineering. I'm your human host, Phil Clark. I've been leading technology teams for over two decades in both eras of software delivery. In each episode, the AI-generated hosts dive into key concepts and insights from my articles and blog posts. While this conversation is generated by AI, there may be occasional errors or misinterpretations that differ slightly from the original material. Join me as we explore and improve our understanding of digital transformation. I hope this inspires you to read the original article and reach out to me to collaborate. You will find a link to the article in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please like, rate, and follow us on your podcast provider of choice. Your support helps us reach more listeners, and every review counts. Stay tuned for more thought-provoking content, and thanks for being part of our podcast experiment and journey. This episode dives into various team models within technology organizations, focusing on comparison between the traditional engineering manager model, where a single manager handles both technical direction and people management on a team, and autonomous cross-functional teams, inspired by frameworks like team topologies. I make the case for the latter, highlighting the intentional separation of people management from delivery responsibilities. This approach promotes greater autonomy, distributed leadership, and psychological safety, enabling teams to thrive in a more empowered and collaborative environment. The AI hosts dive into my perspectives, exploring the strengths and weaknesses of each model, including the challenges posed by unicorn EM roles and the critical role of trust in autonomous teams. The discussion ultimately underscores the importance of being intentional about the mindset an organization adopts to scale, regardless of the structural framework chosen. Let's dive in.
So, you know, you recently pointed us to another really interesting article. And this one was from Phil Clark over at RethinkYourUnderstanding.com.
Right.
And this one really kind of dives into a core aspect of, like, you know, how we structure teams in tech.
Yeah.
Specifically looking at, like, the different mindsets around the role of the engineering manager.
Absolutely. So yeah. Phil's article really nicely, you know, lays out this contrast between two very, very common approaches that we see out there.
Right.
He talks about, you know, the more traditional model of, you know, where the engineering manager sits as the leader of a team and is responsible for both, you know, the technical direction and all the people management aspect.
Right, right.
And then he contrasts that with the model of autonomous cross-functional teams.
Yeah. And that's really, I think, you know, what we want to kind of dig into in this deep dive is like, you know, looking at these two models as Phil describes them and kind of exploring, like, what are the fundamental differences? You know, what are the benefits that he attributes to each? And then also, like, what are some of the potential drawbacks that he calls out?
Yeah. And, you know, our goal here is to really help you, the listener, understand these different, you know, philosophies behind how we think about team structure and leadership. And I think the point that Phil makes really well is that it's not just about, like, drawing boxes on an org chart.
Right.
It's about the fundamental beliefs that shape how we build and empower our teams.
Yeah. And what was really interesting is what kind of sparked Phil to write this article in the first place is, you know, he tells this story about a recent conversation with an executive leader who he, you know, very much respects.
Yeah.
And this leader had this, like, really strong belief that every single team needs an engineering manager.
Right.
Who is not just a manager in title.
Yeah.
But also a deeply technical leader.
Yeah.
Operating, you know, at least at the principal engineer level.
Right.
And so, you know, that moment of kind of misalignment.
Misalignment. Yeah,
as Phil calls it, really kind of, I think, underscores, you know, the different schools of thought around, like, where should that deep technical expertise sit within a team, right?
Yeah. Should it primarily be with the manager?
Right.
Or should it be, you know, distributed and cultivated within the team itself?
Right.
And I think that's a really key question that Phil is trying to wrestle with here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, as we kind of go through this, I just want to remind everyone that, you know, we're drawing heavily from Phil's insights in this article. Our conversation might kind of, you know, go down a rabbit hole or two. We might not touch on every single point that he makes. So if this conversation sparks your interest, which hopefully it will, you know, definitely encourage you to go over to rethinkyourunderstanding.com, read Phil's article in its entirety to kind of get the full picture. Okay, so let's unpack this thing. The central question that I think Phil is kind of addressing here is, should we expect our engineering managers to also be the top technical experts on their teams? And that really, I think, is like the core tension between these two mindsets.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It's the tension.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about, you know, reporting structures. It's about
Yeah.
the inherent expectations we put on the engineering manager role and
Right.
how that, you know,
Yeah.
how that kind of ripples out into the dynamics
Right.
and the effectiveness of a team.
Yeah, so let's start by just looking at the first model that Phil talks about, this traditional engineering manager model. How does he paint a picture of how this is typically set up?
So, you know, you mentioned it already. You know, in this model, the engineering manager takes on this very central role as the leader of the delivery team. And so they're typically responsible for both the technical direction of the work, you know, making key architectural decisions, guiding technical implementation, and then all of the people management responsibilities as well. You know, performance reviews, you know, career development conversations, overall team well-being. They work very closely with the product manager and directly oversee one of the developers on the team. And so ultimately, they hold a huge amount of the accountability for the team's success and their ability to deliver.
So clear accountability from, you know, a single leader. That definitely sounds like, you know, a potential advantage. What are some other pros?
Yeah, definitely clear accountability is one of the things that Phil calls out. He also argues that, you know, if the engineering manager possesses strong technical skills themselves, they can provide valuable technical mentorship and guidance to the team, right? So helping to upskill the individual contributors. The other thing is, you know, there's often this perceived alignment between team performance and people management because the same person is responsible for both. And then finally, you know, Phil notes that this structure tends to be familiar and comfortable for a lot of leaders and organizations, particularly those with, you know, more established or hierarchical roots.
Familiarity definitely, I think, can breed, you know, that sense of stability. But what about the other side of the coin, right? What are some of the disadvantages or the potential pitfalls that Phil sees in this engineering manager model?
Yeah, Phil raises some really interesting points here. I think one of the most significant ones is the risk of creating what he calls unicorn roles.
Unicorn roles.
And these are individuals who are, you know, exceptionally talented both in technical leadership and people management. And he's quick to point out that those individuals are incredibly rare and very, very challenging to find and retain within an organization. Yeah, he also suggests that this model can sort of inadvertently foster
A sense of top-down control. Potentially limiting the team's autonomy and also hindering the development of leadership skills at other levels.
Makes sense if the engineering manager is always the one at the ultimate technical authority and the one who's managing everyone's careers. It's like, how does anyone else ever get to kind of step into those roles and take more ownership?
I think that's a great point. And, you know, another thing that I think is implied in there is, you know, with that much accountability resting on one person's shoulders, doesn't that also create a risk of, you know, kind of a single point of failure or a bottleneck within the team? You know, if too much, you know, both technical and managerial responsibility rests on one person, their capacity becomes a limiting factor for the entire team's progress.
That's a really good point. Okay, so that kind of paints a picture of the traditional EM model as Phil sees it.
Let's switch gears now and talk about the second model that he discusses, which is autonomous cross-functional teams. So what does that structure typically look like?
Yeah, so this model really draws inspiration from you know, frameworks like team topologies, which focuses on organizing teams around different types of flows. And then the team of teams concept, which really emphasizes network and empowered teams all working together
right.
towards a common goal. And in essence, this is about creating small self-sufficient teams
yeah.
that have, you know, all of the necessary roles, developers, designers, QA engineers, product mm. managers,
yeah.
Potentially others, to really be able to take
right.
a product or feature from inception to delivery with minimal dependencies on other teams.
Yeah.
Right. And so the defining characteristic here is the high degree of autonomy
right.
that these teams operate with.
Right.
Right. Fostering agility, a strong sense of ownership,
yeah.
and faster decision making within the team itself.
So if autonomy and a strong sense of ownership are at the heart of this model,
right.
what other advantages does Phil see in this approach?
Yeah. So high autonomy and ownership at yeah. the team level is a primary benefit.
Right.
Phil believes this empowers team members. It fosters greater sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
It encourages collaboration and development of collective leadership within the team.
Right.
Because managers in this model are less involved in the day-to-day
right.
technical delivery. They can dedicate more time and energy to coaching their team members,
right.
focusing on their individual growth and well-being.
Right.
And from a broader organizational perspective, Phil argues that this model is significantly more scalable
right.
for organizations that prioritize agility,
right.
rapid iteration,
yeah.
and a smooth, continuous flow of value delivery.
Scalability is definitely, you know, a critical factor for, I think, a lot of organizations.
Absolutely.
But with all of that autonomy, you know, kind of distributed across these teams,
yeah.
are there any potential downsides or challenges that Phil points out?
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, some of the things that Phil points out,
yeah.
he emphasizes the critical need for very strong role clarity
yeah.
within these autonomous teams. So
right. mm-hmm.
each team member really needs a clear understanding of, you know, what are their responsibilities?
Yeah.
What are their areas of ownership and how do their contributions fit into
oh,
the
yeah.
overall team goal? And this becomes particularly important,
right.
you know, for roles like, you know, a tech lead versus a product manager
right.
versus an agile leader. Like those distinctions become super important in this model.
Yeah.
This model also relies heavily
right.
on a mature organizational culture
right.
built on a foundation of trust and psychological safety.
Right.
Right. If team members don't feel safe to take risks,
yeah.
to make independent decisions, to learn from mistakes,
yeah.
The intended benefits of autonomy may not actually materialize.
Right.
Yeah, he also acknowledges that this model can feel unfamiliar or even somewhat uncomfortable for leaders
yeah.
who are very accustomed to, you know, more traditional hierarchical management structures.
Right.
And then finally, you know, there can be potential points of friction
yeah.
when these highly autonomous teams need to interact
right.
with other parts of the organization
right. yeah.
that might still be operating under a more traditional,
right.
less autonomous model.
Right. So it sounds like, you know, implementing the autonomous cross-functional team model successfully
right.
often requires a pretty significant cultural shift
yeah.
within the organization.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's revisit that moment of misalignment that Phil describes in the article.
Yeah.
Can you just remind us of the specifics of that anecdote?
Absolutely. So Phil recounts this recent meeting that he's in
right.
with an executive leader that he holds in very high regard
right.
And a number of other senior managers. And this executive who's generally seen as forward thinking,
right.
you know, voices this very strong conviction that every single engineering team must mm-hmm. be led by an engineering manager
right.
who also possesses deep technical expertise,
yeah.
specifically at the principal engineer level
yeah.
or higher.
Right.
And he expresses this belief, you know, with considerable passion and conviction.
And so what was like the core reasoning that this executive offered to support that conviction?
Yeah, so he uses a compelling analogy
okay.
involving an accounting team.
Okay.
And he kind of poses this question to the group. He says, you know, who would you rather have leading an accounting team?
Right.
Someone who might be a competent manager, mm. but whose technical accounting skills are somewhat outdated.
Right.
Or an accountant who is absolutely at the forefront of their field
yeah.
with the most current knowledge and best practices, right?
Right.
And so the implication is quite clear. He believes that engineering teams similarly require leaders
right.
with current cutting-edge technical expertise
right.
to effectively guide and direct their work.
It's an understandable analogy on the surface, right? Like we want up-to-date expertise in any mm-hmm. leadership role, right? But how did Phil counter that argument?
Yeah.
Drawing from the principles of the model that he prefers.
Yeah, so Phil's counter-argument centers on the idea that while he very much values
yeah.
you know, having highly skilled, technically exceptional individuals within the team.
Yeah.
He believes that that deep technical expertise should primarily reside
right.
within the team itself.
Right.
Right. So distributed amongst roles like tech leads and
right.
senior engineers, rather than being solely concentrated in the engineering manager role.
Right.
And he expresses concern about the potential pitfalls
yeah.
of promoting, you know, highly talented engineers into management positions
right.
solely based on their technical prowess
right.
without necessarily considering their aptitude or
yeah.
genuine interest in, you know, the often very different demands of people management.
Right. We've all seen that or heard of that story.
Oh, yeah.
Where you promote your best engineer and suddenly you've lost a great engineer.
Script.
And maybe gained a not so great manager.
Yeah. You've traded one for the other.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And this leads into what Phil so aptly terms, you know, the modern trap of experts at the top.
Yeah.
So can you unpack that a little bit? What does he mean by that?
So Phil expresses this concern about what he sees as, you know, potentially this unrealistic expectation
right.
that we place on engineering managers.
Yeah.
That they should simultaneously be, you know, a top tier technical contributor.
Yeah.
Deeply involved in the code and architectural decisions.
Right.
An exceptional people manager.
Right.
Adept at, you know, coaching, mentoring, fostering team growth.
Right.
And his argument is that achieving true excellence in both of these very different domains
right.
is incredibly difficult. And, you know, often individuals who excel in one area may not necessarily have the skills or the passion for the other.
Right.
And I think what's so insightful here is, you know, he uses these really great analogies
yeah.
to drive this point home.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He reminds us that, you know, we generally don't expect the best CFO
right.
to be the one personally reconciling all the individual spreadsheets.
Right.
Right. Where we don't typically require, you know, individual contributors in any field.
Right.
To also be responsible for, you know, managing the career development of their peers.
Right. And he has a couple of really like impactful quotes in the article, too, that kind of underscore this point.
He does.
One that really resonated with me was he says, when we expect engineering managers to be both top tier coders and top tier people leaders, we create a unicorn role rare to find and hard to sustain.
Yeah. And that's so true.
Yeah.
So powerful.
Yeah. And then another great one is he says, just because someone is excellent at their craft doesn't mean they should lead the team. And just because someone leads doesn't mean they must be the best at the craft.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like those two quotes, I think, really encapsulate,
yeah.
you know, this core belief that he has around
absolutely.
You know, separating these two distinct
yeah.
areas of expertise and leadership. So given, you know, this underlying philosophy, then how has Phil's division
right.
at his organization actually structured their engineering teams?
Okay.
Like what specific path have they chosen to kind of separate
right.
those management responsibilities from the day-to-day technical delivery?
Yeah. So Phil describes a structure that's, you know, heavily influenced
right.
by the principles of team topologies.
Okay.
And so they've adopted, you know, these autonomous cross-functional teams,
yeah.
as we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And these teams, again, are intentionally composed of all the necessary roles
right.
required for, you know, end-to-end delivery.
Right.
However, a crucial element of their structure and the real key
yeah.
to separating management from delivery is that no one on these delivery teams
yeah.
reports directly to their manager.
Wow. That's a yeah. pretty significant distinction.
Yeah.
So if the engineer managers aren't directly leading these delivery teams in a traditional sense,
yeah.
what exactly is their role in this model? Like, what are their primary responsibilities?
Right. And areas of focus.
Yeah. So in Phil's model, the primary focus of the software engineering managers really shifts towards
okay.
individual growth and development.
Okay.
And so they're responsible for, you know, providing mentorship,
right?
Guiding career progression, you know, offering right. coaching and support,
yep.
ensuring engagement and retention of their team members.
Right.
And very importantly, Phil emphasizes that these managers are not evaluated or measured
okay.
based on the delivery metrics of any specific team.
Right.
Right. So they're not being judged on, you know, sprint velocity or feature completion rates or anything like that.
Okay.
Furthermore, they're also not necessarily required
right.
to be, you know, principal level engineers themselves.
Okay.
He points out that, you know, they might be senior engineers or folks who've progressed
yeah.
into management from, you know, kind of mid-level positions, bringing, yeah. you know, really valuable leadership and coaching skills.
Right.
Rather than necessarily being
the absolute, you know, top technical expert in their domain.
Yeah. And it sounds like even managers who still possess
yeah.
strong technical skills at that line level or that mid level can contribute to these delivery teams, but in a specific way, right?
Right. Roman? So they can actually participate in the delivery teams as individual contributors.
Okay.
Right. Often leveraging their, you know, senior level technical expertise.
Right.
However, the really crucial aspect is that they participate as contributors, as peers on the team, and not in the capacity of the manager on the team.
Right.
Right. So the team perceives them as, you know, a colleague contributing to the work.
Yeah.
Not as, you know, someone to whom they directly report for, you know, their performance or day-to-day tasking.
Right.
And Phil actually says, you know, explicitly, we don't embed managers on teams because we want our teams to be safe, autonomous, and accountable together, not upward.
Right. Yeah. That really highlights that strong emphasis on that team autonomy and that shared accountability.
Yeah.
So what are the key benefits then that Phil attributes to this particular structure where management is deliberately separated from delivery? Like what's the core rationale behind adopting this model?
Yeah. So Phil points to several really significant benefits. Firstly, he believes it fosters a stronger sense of psychological safety within the teams, right? So team members feel more comfortable voicing dissenting opinions, experimenting with different approaches, learning from mistakes, without the potential apprehension of, you know, direct managerial oversight on their daily work.
Right.
Secondly, it actively promotes distributed leadership through clearly defined roles like tech lead and agile leader.
Right.
Right. So it's effectively separating the guidance and direction of technical delivery from the responsibilities of, you know, performance management and career development.
Right.
And then ultimately, he believes this structure cultivates this high performing team culture where the entire team feels a collective sense of ownership over the outcomes and takes responsibility for, you know, their shared success.
And he shares a pretty compelling statistic that speaks to the effectiveness of this model, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah. He mentions that since their division adopted this structure, they've consistently maintained a very high employee retention rate.
Okay.
You know, typically above 90%.
Wow.
And often reaching as high as 95%.
Yeah.
Furthermore, he notes that when employees have chosen to leave, you know, their reasons have generally been positive.
Right.
You know, often expressing gratitude for their team, the supportive culture, the opportunities for learning and growth.
Right.
Rather than citing, you know, issues with their direct manager or team dynamics.
Right. So those kind of retention numbers, I think, speak volumes about the positive impact of this kind of approach. And it sounds like this model also has significant implications for, like, the scalability of the engineering organization.
Right. So because engineering managers aren't directly tied to the delivery responsibilities of specific teams.
Yeah.
One manager can effectively provide support and guidance to a larger number of individual contributors across multiple teams. And so Phil mentions, you know, a typical ratio of one manager supporting, you know, 5 to 8 direct reports.
Right.
And this allows the organization to scale its engineering delivery capacity without requiring this like linear increase in management headcount.
Right.
Which, you know, leads to a much more efficient and agile organizational structure.
Now, Phil does address a potential counter argument that some people might raise to this, right? This idea of like, well, if we still need, you know, X number of managers to kind of maintain a healthy ratio, why not just have those managers directly oversee and be embedded within those delivery teams?
Right. He does raise that point.
Yeah.
And it's a very logical one, right? Yeah. A lot of organizations operate under that assumption.
Yeah.
However, Phil argues that this more traditional approach, you know, tends to subtly shift the focus back towards a more hierarchical structure where the responsibility for delivery you know, can become more closely associated with the manager rather than being fully owned by the team itself.
Yeah.
And so his model, by intentionally separating those two things,
really
aims to empower those teams to take full ownership while still providing the necessary, you know, mentorship and support for individual growth through that dedicated management structure.
Right. And to really illustrate, you know, these contrasting philosophies in action. Phil shares this real world example from a post acquisition integration.
Yeah, this is a really great example.
Yeah. So can you walk us through that scenario a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So following the acquisition of a competitor whose engineering teams were very much structured around that more traditional engineering manager model. You know, Phil's division faced the challenge of like integrating those teams.
Right.
And one of the former engineering managers in particular, you know, really struggled with the transition to this model where he was no longer, you know, directly responsible for both the technical delivery and the people management of the same team.
Right.
And his primary concern was like, you know, how can I effectively lead and coach and evaluate my direct reports without being, you know, deeply involved in their day-to-day technical work and decisions?
Yeah, that makes total sense, right? That's a really, I think, natural reaction.
Yeah.
If you're used to being kind of, you know, in the thick of the technical details.
Absolutely.
And suddenly that's not your primary focus anymore.
Yeah. And Phil mentions that, you know, there were a number of conversations, you know, around the concepts of, you know, command and control.
Right.
Versus fostering autonomy and accountability at the team level.
Right.
And while, you know, the former engineering manager, you know, didn't necessarily perceive his previous approach as command and control.
Right.
His leadership style had been developed within this model, where the manager was expected to be, you know, both the technical leader and the direct manager of the team. And so ultimately, you know, that individual actually decided to leave the organization to join another company that more closely aligned with his, you know, preferred engineering manager model.
Right.
And so, you know, this really underscores Phil's point that these are fundamentally different philosophies about team structure and leadership.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, one being inherently right or wrong.
Right. And that kind of leads us to Phil's concluding thoughts in the article.
Yeah.
What are some of the key takeaways that he really wants, you know, the reader and now our listener to kind of sit with and consider after reflecting on these two models?
Yeah. So I think one of the things that Phil really emphasizes is that the underlying mindset that informs, you know, the choice of organizational structure is significantly more important than the specific structure itself.
Right.
And so he poses some, you know, really critical questions for, you know, reflection, right?
Yeah.
He says, are you as an organization, you know, consciously building your teams and processes around a foundation of trust and autonomy?
Right.
Or are you unintentionally reinforcing you know, more traditional models of control and hierarchy?
Yeah.
He also makes this very astute observation
that
sometimes even when organizations adopt, you know, very modern sounding job titles and team structures, those deeply ingrained legacy mindsets about leadership and ownership can still persist.
Right.
And then his final and perhaps, you know, most crucial point is that, you know, the ultimate goal here is not to discover some perfect universally applicable team model, but rather to engage in, you know, honest and critical self-reflection about why a particular model is being chosen.
Right.
And what fundamental philosophy about people and teamwork
that
choice truly reflects.
Yeah. So to kind of summarize our deep dive here into Phil Clark's, you know, really insightful article over at rethinkyourunderstanding.com, you know, he presents this really compelling argument for, you know, carefully considering the separation of people management responsibilities from the, you know, direct leadership of technical delivery within engineering teams.
Yeah.
And he contrasts, you know, his preferred model, which emphasizes these, you know, autonomous cross-functional teams supported by, you know, dedicated managers focused on individual growth with that, you know, more traditional engineering manager model where one individual often carries both of those, you know, really significant responsibilities.
Right. And I think it, as Phil very clearly articulates, you know, neither one of these models is inherently superior to the other. They both come with their own set of potential advantages and disadvantages.
Right.
And the really critical aspect is understanding the fundamental mindset
and the underlying philosophy about how teams function most effectively, that your organization is ultimately seeking to cultivate and scale.
Yeah. So as you're listening to this, you know, we really encourage you to take a moment.
Yeah.
Think about your own experiences.
Yeah.
Your own observations within your organization or other companies that you're familiar with.
Absolutely.
And kind of ask yourself, you know, which of these underlying mindsets, you know, the one favoring a technically leading EM or the one prioritizing team autonomy with separate management support, like which of those resonates more with what you've seen in practice?
Great question. Yeah.
And if this conversation has piqued your interest
yeah.
and you'd like to go even deeper
yeah.
into Phil's arguments and the nuances that he explores,
absolutely.
Definitely recommend visiting rethinkyourunderstanding.com.
Right.
Read the article in its entirety.
Yeah. Lots of great stuff in there.
He provides, you know, even more context and compelling insights.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.
See you then.